Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big-time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Another week of sports has happened. Another week is upon us. Sean Boyd, what is going on?
Hey, how's everything going out there in the Double S Express land? Man, that's the first time I've ever said that, Sean Wally. So, man, that sounds great. The Double S Express land. Do you think that'll stick?
Sounds like a t-shirt or maybe a keychain, a mug.
Man, something. So, but yeah, man, things are going good. I had the chance to work for Fox Sports yesterday, and you know, I had a good time. Spent some time in the broadcast booth. Dick Stockton, Rondé Barber. Those guys are the new duo there for that crew. And it was a great weekend outside of the loss that happened with my beloved Raiders. Man, I can't even begin to tell you, man, how disappointing that was. But, man, outside of that, though, it was a great weekend.
Especially getting out to a 14-0 lead. You see that? You're up two scores. Things are going well.
Yeah, there was a block, the block punt deep in Washington's territory in the first quarter. Stewart, the running back, was on special teams for the Raiders. Recovers the ball, gets into the end zone. It just seemed like things were heading into Oakland's way, and right after that, Matt Flynn has an 81-yard scoring drive with a strike to Michael Rivera, the rookie out of Tennessee, and is it Tennessee or Colorado? I believe it's Tennessee, but 14-0, the Raiders jump out, and it just looked like it was going to be a great game, and all of a sudden the bottom fell out. And I don't know what happened, man. It was incredible. I know exactly what happened. There's a combination of the defense just allowing Washington to march up and down the field, but more importantly, it was Matt Flynn. And I'm going to try to restrain myself from all of the negativity that I had towards them yesterday. But man, 7 sacks. I mean, that can't all be the offensive line, Mr. Wally.
No, not at all. And, you look at Twitter, you look at the newspaper articles, the various blogs for the Raiders, like Vic Dafer's Silver and Black blog at sfgate.com, a good friend of the show. And, Matt just didn't look like he knew what was going on a lot of the time out there. Outside of that scoring drive, the rest of the time, everybody was pretty much scratching their head.
Yeah, you and I had talked before about the question mark on some of the quarterbacks, the contracts that are given to these quarterbacks that, it seems like they have a tremendous upside.
Yeah, and what Sean was talking about there is the fact that all the money given to these quarterbacks, like a Matt Flynn, like a Charlie Whitehurst that Seattle and San Diego know all too well, guy gets millions and millions of dollars and they've done nothing. They haven't proven themselves one bit, and maybe they're an okay backup and now you give them $8 million guaranteed. It's a little ridiculous that contracts should almost be the way they are now in the NFL with rookies, with guys that are drafted. There is a much more structured salary structure to where, like a Russell Wilson, he is the lowest paid starting quarterback in the NFL. Is that fair? Based on his productivity? Probably not. But based on the fact that it's only his second season and, he hasn't done a whole heck of a lot. He has a great home record. He took Seattle to the playoffs. But you know what? By the new rules and what's going on in the NFL, he has to earn it before he can get that payday. He has to be successful for up to 3 years for before he can look at a new contract, before the Seahawks or any other team can say, you know what, we want to make you a 6, 8, 10 million heir overnight. And that's not the case with, like, when Charlie Whitehurst was the backup in Seattle, 2 years, $8 million. Why? What did he do in San Diego besides hold a clipboard? You know, he had the moniker, and he still does, Clipboard Jesus. He's got the long hair and the beard, and and he just sits there and holds the clipboard, and you're going to give him $8 million for that?
Yeah.
The same can be said about a Matt Flynn in Seattle, now in Oakland.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I'm trying to figure out, and again, one of the discussions that we had, I had mentioned, you know, about John Snyder, the president for the Seattle Seahawks, and the relationship that he has with Reggie McKenzie. And I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how in the world could these two not talk, and how in the world could John Snyder not tell Reggie McKenzie that this guy doesn't have the work ethic? It took Warren Moon to come down to San Francisco on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco and tell everybody that the work ethic was not good. And I mean, my goodness, Matt Flynn, you know, if he never steps on the field for the Oakland Raiders, I would be greatly appreciated, because what he did yesterday was a travesty. I mean, you know, from coming out in the beginning of the game, in the introductions, and they call his name, there was a sprinkle of booze that came out. But, you know, I thought that he was going to, you know, right the ship, and, you know, he had that great scoring drive like I'd mentioned earlier. And then after that, everything just went awry, and the booze kept getting louder and louder and louder, and Matt just, you know, he sunk. He sunk to the bottom, man. It was horrible.
Yeah, it's always tough to lose at home, and especially when you have a 14-0 lead and you're in front of the black hole and the rabid Raider Nation, and you know, everybody's feeling good early on in the game, and it just goes downhill from there.
Yeah, and the fans will let you know. That's one of the things you know, with the Raider Nation is when they show some signs of being irritated, they're going to let you know. And at every time he stepped out onto the field, it got to the point that as soon as possession changed hands to Oakland, just before Matt would step on the field, the chorus of boos would just rain down on the field, and it was bad. It was bad. And so, you know, there's one good thing that came out of this, though, Sean Wally, and that is we know that there's no longer a quarterback controversy. So this is Terrell Pryor's team for the rest of this year, and, you know, it's up to Terrell to actually go out there and progress and become a solid quarterback, a more solid quarterback. He's showing signs week after week. Let's hope that, you know, the concussion from last week doesn't hinder him going forward. But, yeah, this is Terrell Pryor's team.
Sean, where do you stand with the choice the Raiders made to hold Terrell Pryor out? It appeared leading up to the game he had passed a number of tests, number of the concussion tests that they need to give the players to clear them, and yet they held him out. Granted, for his long-term health and maybe just the long-term season in 2013, that was probably a smart move. But if he was ready to go, where do you sit on that?
Well, you know, in the beginning, I thought that there was a little bit of a conspiracy going on, because, you know, I love to lean towards that way. You know, the Raiders organization all week showed a progression of Terrell Pryor getting better. They said that he passed this test, and now we have to wait and see if he can pass another test. And Mark Davis and Reggie McKenzie are very smart. They're marketing geniuses, let's face it. They allowed that to continue to go on as the week progressed all the way up to Friday, because they wanted to make sure they sold out. Let's face it, if they said that Matt Flynn was going to start from the jump after the Denver Broncos game, they probably wouldn't have sold out the game. And so they had a sellout crowd. I talked to you earlier that morning, Sunday morning. Last I checked, Terrell Pryor was starting. At the very last minute, there was a scratch, and they said, hey, Terrell's not going to play. They made him inactive, and they start Matt Flynn. And the rest is history. And so, you know, for me, I'm thinking, wow, the Raider organization knew that Terrell Pryor wasn't ready to play. They just wanted to kind of have us go along and believe that, you know, that he was going to play for ticket sales sake. And so, you know, now, you know, at the last minute, Matt Flynn is the starting quarterback. And you could, and again, in that introduction, when he came out onto the field, there were you know, sprinkles of booze because the crowd was just a little uneasy on what was about to happen.
So how much of a factor did RG3 play in the comeback that the Redskins had?
You know, RG3 looked okay. You know, I think that the Redskins' problem is bigger than RG3. I think RG3 did a good job in managing the game. He didn't do anything spectacular. You know, I could say that he was mobile. He got out. He moved out of the pocket. He didn't sting the Raiders for any long gains or anything like that. As a matter of fact, the Raiders' defense was in his face all day long, and it was a defensive struggle for most of the game. Where the problem lied for Oakland was on defense was as they couldn't get the big takeaway. Outside of the big block that they had in the block punt in the first quarter, the Raiders have been hurting all year as far as a takeaway. RG3 did what he had to do to manage the game and make sure that he played mistake-free football, and he did, and that allowed the Redskins to win.
And now lastly, we'll talk about the big change to Sunday's game at O.co. The Raiders welcome in AFC West foe, the San Diego Chargers, and one half of the Double S Express, Sean Boyd, will be there working that game once again. And that is now moved not to Sunday night football, but Sunday late night football, kickoff at 8:35 in the evening.
That's right. So all our fans on the East Coast who listen to On the Double with the Double S Express, that is 11:35 your time Eastern. If you want to watch the Raiders play against the San Diego Chargers, you know, this is something that, of course, the reason why the game has been moved to that time is because, for one, the San Diego Chargers didn't want to flip the games, meaning that this game be moved down to San Diego and then later in the year come up to Oakland. The reason being is because the San Diego Chargers would have three straight road games to play, and if they're a team that's vying for the playoffs, then they wouldn't want to have three away games. So I understand that from San Diego's standpoint. Now, the reason why it's being played at 11:35 Eastern time, 8:35 p.m. Pacific time, is because there's another game going on at the same time on NBC across the bay, and that is the Houston Texans coming into San Francisco to take on the San Francisco 49ers. That game, that kickoff is at 5:30, so both games will be played on the NFL Network. And so what the NFL Network wanted to do is they wanted to make sure that they were able to show both games in its entirety. So if you watch the game on NBC live like you're supposed to, you can also catch it if you have NFL Mobile on the NFL Network, meaning the San Francisco Tech and the Houston Texans game. And then after that, you can catch on the NFL Network the Oakland Raiders and the San Diego Chargers, if that at all makes sense to you, Sean Wally.
I think more what it is the executives at NBC Sports didn't want a competing game at the same time, because
true,
Sunday night football is supposed to be one and only, and this scheduling snafu with the Oakland A's making the playoffs and having a game right around the same time as the Raiders are supposed to be there, well, they chose to have it at 8:35 at night, which of course they're going to lose the majority of, you know, at least a third, if not two-thirds of the nation in terms of viewing. But I guess that's why the DVR was invented.
Yeah, and you are exactly right, Sean Wally. That is the other reason is the Oakland A's winning the AL West. Congratulations to my beloved A's on winning the AL West and getting a taste of home field. In the first round, of course, they're playing the Detroit Tigers, Matt Verlander and company. And so those games will be played Friday and Saturday. And it would be tough for the grounds crew in Oakland to actually turn around and have that game time at 5:30. So that is another reason why the game is moved to 8:30 Pacific Standard Time, is because the grounds crew has to makeshift the baseball field into a football field. And for those of you who are young, you're thinking, wow, what are you talking about? Yeah, Oakland is the only place that has both the Major League Baseball team and the NFL team playing in the same stadium.
Yeah, it's something that used to happen a lot, definitely in the 70s, 80s, and even into the early 90s. But then teams started thinking, wait a minute, You know, if we have our own place, we can make it, you know, a lot more cohesive to our game and our sport and put the fans a lot closer and not have to have these multi-purpose venues.
Yeah, and you know, and one of the things that I'm really excited about, some news that came out from Major League Baseball, is Bud Selig. Of course, you know, Bud Selig, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, he has announced his retirement at the end of the season. You know, of course, David Stern in the NBA announcing his retirement as well. And we all know what David Stern did as far as his curtain call for the NBA, and that's keeping the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento. Well, Bud Selig has, in 2015, he's announced his retirement. Bud Selig, what he has mentioned is his last call of duty will be to make sure that the Oakland A's get a Major League Baseball stadium of their own. So, you know, stay tuned on that one. So, you know, I look forward to that. I believe that, you know, it's a long time coming. There are some things going on out here in the Bay to where I don't know how the San Francisco Giants have all these territorial rights out here in the Bay. That's a whole nother story. But Bud Selig is fed up with it, and you know, which he should be. And hopefully the Oakland A's will have their own ball field here in the next few years.
And some good news for the Oakland A's. Not only did they win the AL West, which is good news for them, as well as making the playoffs, but NFL writer for Sports Illustrated, Peter King, in his Monday Morning Quarterback today, said he believes the A's will make it to the World Series.
Wow, you know, that, you know, it sure would be fun to have the Oakland A's win the World Series. Of course, you know, the Bay Area has been known for the past few years because of the San Francisco Giants winning the World Series two out of the past 3 years of having success. But, you know, if you know the Bay Area, one side of the Bay does not cheer for the other. And so it would be, you know, it would be great for the Oakland A's to actually, you know, do that, as Peter King is saying. And so it would be an added plus for the East Bay.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll be right back after this, right here on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And so much NFL, so little time. Where do we go next, Mr. Boyd?
Man, well, I know that there was a game of interest for you yesterday, up in the Pacific Northwest. The Seattle Seahawks actually going on the road and playing the Houston Texans, Mr. Wally. Give the listeners a breakdown on what was going on there.
The Houston Texans were going on for about two and a half quarters. You know, say what you will about Pete Carroll and his gum chewing and his antics and his khakis with tennis shoes on the field. He's been preaching since day one. You cannot win the game in the first quarter. You can only win it in the fourth quarter. And the Seattle Seahawks are finding ways to do that on the road, which is a big step in the right direction for Seattle. If you know anything about the Seahawks, they have had road troubles for years. And now this season, they are 2-0 on the road, which includes two late comebacks, week one in Carolina, and now Sunday, week four in Houston. The Texans got out to a 20-3 lead in the first half. They went to halftime. It was 20-3. I was ready to break the television. It didn't look like the Seahawks of the previous 3 weeks. And you're wondering, what in the world is going on here? Granted, Texas, the Houston Texans are a really good team. They've got playmakers everywhere. They've got J.J. Watt and Brian Cushing on defense. You know, the great Arian Foster and Andre Johnson on the outside. So they have a lot of weapons. They've been in the playoffs for the last few years. They just haven't gotten over that hump to win the big game. And you're sitting there scratching your head if you're a member of the 12th man. And you know that Pete Carroll and his coaching staff, they've always been able to make great adjustments at halftime, come out and change the game in the third quarter. And they did exactly that. And it took a 98-yard drive led by Russell Wilson, who Gary Kubiak, after the game, head coach for the Texans, said was, quote, magical and at times unstoppable. Wilson led a 98-yard touchdown drive. Seahawks were down a touchdown at 20-13 with about 2 minutes 45 seconds left in the game. And if you remember, Sean Boyd, I text you three letters, W-O-W, because of what just happened in Reliance Stadium. It was third and four. The Texans could have put the game away with one, maybe two more first downs. Instead of handing the ball to Arian Foster, it was a designed screen pass to a tight end, believe it or not. Owen Daniels was the target. Richard Sherman was blanketing him as Cam Chancellor was blitzing quarterback Matt Schaub for the Texans, forcing Schaub to throw it quick and put air under the ball to get it over a charging Chancellor. Sherman knew about the play. The entire defense for Seattle knew about the play. They had scouted it. They've seen it on film in all their studies of the Texans. And Sherman literally took the ball away from Owen Daniels, lost a shoe in the process, and ran 58 yards for the game-tying touchdown.
Yeah, you know, when I saw that play, you know, all I could think of is, for one, is why are you throwing the ball, Matt Schaub, to Owen Daniels with arguably the best corner, shutdown corner in the league over in that vicinity. And, you know, it happened. I mean, you know, Richard Sherman intercepts the ball, loses the shoe, runs into the end zone for the score. You know, call it what you will. I mean, you know, I call it divine intervention when these types of things happen, especially the way the game was going for the Seahawks. And you had mentioned that when the Seahawks go on the road, you know, things are different. Of course, they beat Carolina 12-7. In week one, and then now this game, you know, it took that interception to put it into overtime, and Seattle, you know, seals the deal. But you have to wonder what's the difference between playing at home outside of the obvious, the 12th man. Why does Seattle have such a tough time? And of course I'm a stats guy, and so, you know, I'm looking here. First downs, Houston dominated 29-15. Total plays, 88-58. Total yards, 476 in favor of Houston to 270. I mean, everything. Time of possession was in favor of the Texans as well. You know, all I can think of is there has to be some type of divine intervention. You know, Russell Wilson didn't have a great game. I mean, it wasn't a stellar game. 12-23 for 123 yards and an interception. He didn't throw a touchdown. And, you know, but yet the Seahawks find a way to win the games. And so, you know, I'm at a loss. I'm trying to figure out why they're so schizophrenic, why they can dominate at home, and then when they go on the road, it just seems like another team. Maybe you can answer that.
Well, I think that's probably what's keeping Pete Carroll awake at night, because you could make a case that the Seattle Seahawks dominated the second half in Houston.
Right.
They were blown out of the building in the first half, no doubt. To a man, they will each tell you that, you know, they weren't doing what they were supposed to do in the first half. Yet, for whatever reason, their confidence at halftime didn't wane. They believed in their game plan. They believed in each other. And they just started making plays. Whether or not that has to do with maybe their foot wasn't on the pedal right in the first half and they, you know, wanted to feel it out and see if they had to turn it on. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping they didn't play a little cat and mouse game. But the real fire starter for the Seahawks is number three, and it was Russell Wilson. And A1 Marshawn Lynch, beast mode, even told Wilson on the sidelines, "Take over, Russ. Let's go. Right. Take over." And like Gary Kubiak was saying, Russell Wilson was amazing. He was magical, and he was the reason Seattle kept drives alive, and they were able to get in scoring position, whether it be by Steven Hauschka's field goals or the lone touchdown.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you're hearing that coming from a running back and also a leader on the team, and Marshawn Lynch, I mean, Marshawn Lynch had 98 yards of rushing, so, and a touchdown. I mean, of course, one of his runs, he had a 43-yard run in the second half. And, I mean, so he did an awesome job, you know, an awesome job in leading the team. And so, you know, that's great communication and great chemistry in your backfield to where you know, the quarterback and the running back are talking and making sure they're on the same page. And so, yeah, you definitely have to tip your hats off to Seattle for coming through, because any other team down 20-3, 20-6, you know, to come back, you know, and score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, that's just amazing. You know, so that speaks volumes on the resiliency of the team. And as you were just saying a minute ago, that, you know, they just don't believe that they're out of the game. And so, you know, yeah, that kudos to the Seahawks for that victory.
Yeah, it all started last season with the come from behind victory in Chicago in October. And that, you know, every time they go through that, you know, it teaches any team, not just the Seahawks, anytime you're down and you can come from behind and gain from some adversity and live through it and strive from it, you know, it gets in your psyche and lets you know that, okay, we've been here before. We can do this. We're not out of the, you know, anything yet, but, you know, we've come back from this issue before. We can do it. And, you know, they did it in Atlanta. Seattle did in the playoffs. And granted, they lost in the last 30 seconds, but, you know, the fact of them being able to do it in Carolina and do it again in Houston and another tough road game coming up in Indianapolis, it will just create more armor of metal for, you know, road games and letting this young team know that, you know, we can withstand adversity and come from behind.
Yeah, this is definitely, you hit it right on the head. This is definitely a test for Seattle to see if they can come through with the adversity. Two tough games on the road, the Houston Texans yesterday, and then, of course, the Indianapolis Colts coming up, you know, this weekend. And so, yeah, it's definitely going to test and see how tough this team is, you know, to come back. I don't know the injuries. As far as the injuries are concerned with Seattle, it doesn't sound like there are major injuries on the team, and that's the recipe for success in the NFL. If you can stay healthy and, you know, keep your guys out of trouble, then you should be able to go far into the playoffs and hopefully the Super Bowl.
Well, on the injury front, since you mentioned it, Sean, one of the reasons they probably didn't have great success against the Texans' awesome front seven of J.J. Watt and Brian Cushing and company was they were missing three starters on the offensive line. Their center, who is the quarterback of the offensive line, if you will, as you know, Sean, he directs traffic. He tells guys who to block and who to watch for. Obviously, you're aware that Russell Okung, one of the best starting left tackles in the league, is out for 8 weeks. And they were also missing their right guard, Bruno Giacomini, who just today had arthroscopic knee surgery. So they did have a rookie starting on the line and a guy at left tackle, Paul McQuiston, starting his second game this year. So a little bit of issues on the O-line, and that probably didn't help them start off very well.
Yeah, you're talking about that cog, that centerpiece, Max Unger. You know, of course, he's, you know, the collegiate All-American coming out of the University of Oregon. He has been a stellar piece, you know, with the Seahawks for, I believe this is his third year. And, you know, having him out is, that's huge adversity for the Seahawks. And so how long is he out for?
You know, they're hoping that he can come back this week. He got a little banged up, and he isn't a serious injury like an Okung that's going to miss 8 weeks. And now Giacomini, who had the arthroscopic surgery, and he'll be out probably 2 weeks. But, you know, it's also on the flip side, it's good experience for the rookie right guard, Michael Bowie, and the backup center, Lemuel Jean-Pierre, and now you've got Paul McQuiston getting more time too. So experience is what people need and what, you know, leads people to be good players. So hopefully that'll help down the line.
Yeah, you know, and having that depth, as you're mentioning, at the guard position, you know, with James Carpenter and Lemuel Jean-Pierre, you know, it only helps your team as the season goes on, because when your starters become healthy, then the Lemuel Jean-Pierres, the Alvin Baileys, the Michael Bowies, all down the line, actually can help the team, you know, as far as the longevity. 60 minutes is a hard, long-fought, you know, game, you know, when you're going to battle, and you definitely need all your cogs and your pieces in place to be successful.
And we've got a game going on right now, Monday Night Football, the New Orleans Saints hosting the Miami Dolphins, the upstart Miami Dolphins. This is the game of 3-0 against 3-0. One team will move to 4-0, joining the Seattle Seahawks, Denver Broncos, and Kansas City Chiefs, as well as the New England Patriots. And right now, it is all New Orleans Saints in the Superdome, 28-10.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the New Orleans Saints, they're a sentimental favorite for me. Of course, originally being from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you know, I always kind of look at New Orleans and see how they're doing. I mean, Drew Brees is putting the number. I mean, he's 20 of 26, 261 yards, and 3 touchdowns with no interceptions. So for all you fantasy leaguers out there who have Drew Brees, I mean, you've hit a gold mine today. And so, you know, Miami right now, they're only, you know, bright spot is Lamar Miller, their running back. He has 62 yards and a touchdown. He's averaging about 5.6 yards a carry. You know, Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, I mean, let's face it, for Miami to be 3-0 right now is, you know, amazing. And, you know, Ryan Tannehill has shown that he is definitely a franchise quarterback. And, I have my doubts in the beginning, Sean Wally, on Ryan Tannehill, but the kid is tall. He's very agile and athletic. He can move. And he has a nice ball, you know. And so, you know, Miami has definitely benefited by having him, you know, as their quarterback. And they found a gem.
You know, you have to wonder in this game tonight if Miami is not featuring their receivers enough. They've got really good receivers with Mike Wallace, Brian Hartline, and you already mentioned the running back out of the backfield. The Saints have a really improved defense with a new defensive coordinator, so that probably plays into it quite a bit. But yeah, Tannehill is definitely playing light years above where he did last season, his rookie year.
Yeah, for Miami with the receiving corps, and you mentioned Mike Wallace, you know, he was supposed to be a huge addition to the team. It just hasn't materialized just yet. You have Marcus Thigpen as one of the wideouts, and of course there's now journeyman Brandon Gibson, formerly of the St. Louis Rams, of course Pacific Northwest ties, Washington State Cougar, and Rogers Ram out of Puyallup, Washington. Brandon Gibson is actually having a pretty good game, but they have a strong nucleus of receivers in Miami that can get up and down the field and can find the soft spots. And it's just like you're saying, the New Orleans Saints, dialed in. You know, Sean Payton back in his, from suspension the year prior. And then you have Rob Ryan. Say what you will about Rob Ryan, his being eccentric, the long hair, the craziness, the whole nine. I think he's found his spot here in New Orleans in the group that he has on defense because they're showing it. And so, we were wondering who that X factor team was going to be when we started talking about in the preseason in the NFL. I thought that it was going to be the Washington Redskins to come back and actually be a little bit better than they were the year before. But one of the things that I'd mentioned before was the New Orleans Saints, and how things were going to be with Sean Payton back, as the head coach. And man, it's night and day how these guys are playing this year from last year.
And if things stand as they are right now, the Saints will stay undefeated, move to 4-0. And let's talk about a couple of the other 4-0 teams real quick before break here, Sean Boyd. That would be the New England Patriots, the Kansas City Chiefs, of course, the aforementioned Seattle Seahawks. And the final 4-0 team is who? Drumroll, please. Sean Boyd, can you pull a rabbit out of your hat?
With the undefeated teams, we didn't mention the Denver. Did you mention the Denver Broncos?
Ding, ding, ding. There you go. Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos. So what do you think about the 4-0 teams? Do any of them surprise you at this point?
Well, I would have to say if there was one team to surprise me, and again, going back to preseason, you can't take everything that we say for face value because things change, and this is the reason why they play the games. I doggedly talked about my beloved division, the AFC West, as far as the caliber of talent that is in the AFC West. And as you had said, Sean, you said this, and I have to, now that I'm thinking about it, you had mentioned this early on, and I have to applaud you for this. The Kansas City Chiefs, right now in the AFC West, you have two teams that are at 4-0. And, depending on the way the ball bounced a couple of times with the San Diego Chargers, they could very well have been 3-1. And so the AFC West is looking like a powerhouse division as we speak in the first quarter of the NFL. I did not see this coming. I didn't, even with an Andy Reid-led team, Alex Smith, the game manager, when you look up game manager in the dictionary, there is Alex Smith's face for crying out loud. But with all of that being said, I had no clue that they were going to start out and do as well as they're doing.
Well, Kansas City has had a lot of talent for quite a few years, 2-3 years. You're scratching your head is how they cannot win games, and they changed coaches, and Romeo Crennel couldn't get it done last year. And so they went out and they hired one of the better coaches in all of football, and Andy Reid. And not only that, they brought in a quality quarterback, one that San Francisco was ready just to cast off for a bag of, used practice jerseys. And I think they're going to regret that at some point. Obviously, the Niners have Kaepernick, and he's a fine quarterback and doing good things for them. But goodness.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about a game manager, Sean Wally. And I mean, for Alex Smith to do what he's doing, this isn't anything new. And if you can surround him with the right pieces, is what we're finding out, is that you're going to get victories. Now, you can hear you hear some of the media prognosticators saying that, hey, the Chiefs haven't played anybody worth their medal. Well, I look at it this way. Kansas City is beating the teams that they are supposed to beat. And when you can do that, you're going to go far in the NFL season. And so the New York Giants are not having a good year, as a matter of fact, being a winless team. But Kansas City went in and they took care of business. And Alex Smith threw 41 times yesterday, 24-41, 3 touchdowns. He had a couple of picks, but he didn't do anything that, had the rails go off the track, if you will. So, I mean, I have to commend the AFC West. I have to commend the Kansas City Chiefs. Of course, the Denver Broncos, that is a whole nother story. When you're scoring 52 points like you're doing, like the Broncos are doing, it's going to be a long year for the San Diego Chargers and the Oakland Raiders in that division. But, 2-4-0 teams in the AFC West, that has to be the biggest surprise for me.
And Sean, what's scary with the Denver Broncos is Peyton Manning. He's 37 years old. He's got the best stats of his career right now after four games.
Yeah, so, you know, last year Peyton, this was his first full year after the surgeries, and you know, he was still trying to get his legs back, and you know, I think he was thinking that maybe he was at the end of his career, but things are going so well right now. A couple of weeks ago, Peyton Manning had uttered that he can play another 3 to 4 years. And that has to be exciting news for Bronco fans. And, you know, and that's exciting for Peyton Manning. I mean, it takes a lot, you know, of your mental psyche when you're injured like that. You know, even though you're tough and exterior, there are a lot of questions that go on inside of you as an athlete. Can you do it? Can you become 110%? Can you bring this new team, you know, to the Super Bowl like you did your old team? And, you know, all of these things run through your head. And so, you know, I have to commend the Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning for, you know, for what they're doing, because it's not easy. It's not easy to come out week after week. And, you know, again, you put 52 points up on the Philadelphia Eagles, which Chip Kelly, it's supposed to be his team. Just a few weeks ago, I'm marveling over the fact that they had that hurry-up offense, and I thought that, you know, Philadelphia was going to revolutionize the NFL. And what the Broncos have done, is, you know, especially against Philadelphia yesterday, it proves that, you know, they're a solid football team, both on the offense and the defense.
Now, Sean Boyd is a former high school football coach. What would you say a good completion percentage is for a quarterback?
Oh, man. I mean, at the high school level, if you know, you'd be happy with, you know, 60%. You know, at the collegiate level, you're probably, you know, a little bit higher. You know, you're looking at like the Johnny Manziels, the Teddy Bridgewaters. They're probably up there at around, you know, between, you know, 65 to 73%. But at the pro level, I mean, if you're at about 70%, that's considered pretty good also.
Young Peyton Manning, 75% after four games.
Man, that's intense. You know, that is intense. You know, because when you get to the NFL, that's the best of the best, and you're playing against the best of the best week in and week out. When you have to go up against nickel packages, because there are a lot of nickel packages that you see, that means that there are at least five defensive backs, and then you can include a couple of linebackers as well that are spying everything that you do. So for him to be 75% in completion, that is amazing. Just amazing.
Sean Boyd, why don't you tell the callers how to reach us and tell everybody what's coming up after this break?
Well, when we come back from the break, we will be talking more football and maybe a little bit of baseball, since baseball is coming up. But you can give us a call if you'd like. 888-429-5471. Again, that is 888-429-5471. When we come back, we'll be talking more NFL, a little bit of baseball. We'll talk about some firings that happened in football as well. You're listening to the best sports talk on the Double with the Double S Express. $20 in my pocket. I'm looking for a drummer. This is awesome.
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally. It's been an action-packed show thus far, my friend, talking NFL and some of the great things that have happened in week four in the NFL, actually week five with four games in the books. Your beloved Seahawks 4-0, along with six other teams in the NFL. Got a chance to talk a little bit about the, you know, my beloved Raiders. Some of the things that are going on there right now as we speak. There's a Monday night game going on. New Orleans 35-10 over the Miami Dolphins. Whew. We're moving right along, my friend.
Final NFL question for you, Sean Boyd. Which 4-0 team will be the last to stay undefeated in 2013?
Boy, that's a tough one. Week after week, I'm becoming more and more impressed with the Seattle Seahawks and the things that they're doing. Of course, overcoming the adversities that we've been talking about. I'm looking at a very tough New Orleans Saints team that looks like they are for real. They're in a tough division right now, you know, and so. You know, I would probably say the safest bet, you know, when you're looking at the NFC West and we're in the Saints in their division playing the Atlanta Falcons as well, which I believe is a great team despite their record. You know, I'm going to have to go with the New England Patriots right now. You know, I mean, they're in a division right now that is, you know, still trying to find themselves with Buffalo and the Jets. It's a lot easier for them to run the table than it would be the other teams that I'd mentioned. So I'd probably say the New England Patriots right now.
And that to me is a surprise on a couple levels. I was surprised, number one, as to how they were able to handle Atlanta last night on Sunday Night Football in Atlanta. And I think Atlanta has been one of the biggest disappointments so far in 2013. And I'm assuming, Sean, you would agree, as you would pick them, as most people did, to be pretty darn good this season.
Well, not wait, I didn't pick them to be pretty darn good. I picked them to win the Super Bowl. And so, yeah, hey, I admit, I wanted
to give you some leeway.
Hey, I have to admit, you know, when I'm wrong there. And I mean, there's still a lot of season left, but it's not looking too good for the Atlanta Falcons just yet. There's a reason why I didn't pick the Denver Broncos, though. And that reason is, you know, a team that's running on such high octane as the Broncos are right now, there has to be somewhat of a letdown. And I mean, if they run the table, then that's great. I just think that, you know, I don't see them going a full 16-game season at that level. They have to have a hiccup in the road to where they just have a trashy game. And for the New England Patriots, right now, what they're doing is they're finding themselves. Tom Brady is finding a way to reinvent this team, let's face it, with no-name receivers. We don't even know who the running backs are. And week after week, they're finding a way to win. And so Bill Belichick he definitely has a formula for success. And so I'm believing that New England can go far with this undefeated season.
Yeah, definitely. You look at the schedules, and I don't know. It's been a little bit iffy as to whether or not the Broncos have played top-tier teams, and I would say so far they haven't. You look at who they've beaten. They beat the Ravens, who were a quality team last year, but the Ravens just also lost to Buffalo.
Right.
And then they lost, the Broncos defeated the 0-4 Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They defeated your Raiders, who the Raiders mm-hmm. gave a decent effort.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they dismantled the Eagles. You know, it's going right. to get tougher down the road, as they've got the Cowboys in Dallas coming up on Sunday. Then they get a bye week, and they face the Jaguars for that bye week.
Right.
And then they're at the Colts, which is going to be huge. Of course, Peyton returning to Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And then they get RG3. So it's going to get tougher the second half of the season. They've also got the Chiefs, of course, being in the division, the Patriots they play, the Titans they play, the Texans they play before finishing up with your Raiders in Oakland. So if anything, Denver's got a tougher schedule later on down the line.
Yeah, when it comes to playing teams, especially when it comes to playing the teams in your division, the AFC West, there hasn't been a division with more parity. And so, you know, when you think that there's going to be a team that you're going to walk over, you know, whether it's the San Diego Chargers, Oakland Raiders, or Kansas City Chiefs, those guys play each other tough. And so the division is going to be tough for them. But as you had mentioned, I would circle this date with the Broncos going into Indianapolis. And so, you know, you can be rest assured that the media is going to be a frenzy. This could be the AFC championship game, if you will. And a lot of people are going to pick Peyton Manning to win this game. But, you know, I'm not putting anything past the Indianapolis Colts, you know, especially with adding Trent Richardson and, you know, Andrew Luck becoming a better quarterback week after week, and they're at home. So that would be a huge test for the Denver Broncos.
Definitely lots of fun to come in the NFL weeks ahead, and everybody in the college ranks has to wonder what is next for the USC Trojans after the bizarre actions of their leadership Saturday night into early Sunday morning, getting blasted by Arizona State. USC flies home. They fire head coach Lane Kiffin after he walks off the plane. They don't even allow him on the team buses. The athletic director at USC made the decision during the third quarter of the game and let Lane go on the tarmac and said, find your way home.
Yeah, you know, say what you will about Lane Kiffin. You could, you know, and of course, if there's any organization that, you know, would rain down fire and brimstone on Lane Kiffin, it would be the Oakland Raiders organization. I mean, all of that stuff aside, you know, I just think that USC handled that one very tacky. You know, the young man couldn't get off the plane and get on the bus with his team without finding out that he was being let go. And, you know, I've always known USC to be, you know, a class act program, you know, despite some of the things that, you know, that have gone on that allowed them to have scholarships taken. I mean, that's still one of the best programs in the country. I mean, if you say USC job, that's a job that any coach would want. And so for Pat Hayden, the president of the athletic department, to actually do that, and, you know, the way it all went down, I just thought that it could have been handled a better way.
What about the fall from grace for Lane Kiffin? And he's still so young. He's only 38 years old. And look at how many millions he has made from the Oakland Raiders, the Tennessee Volunteers, and now USC. The guy doesn't have to work another day in his life if he chooses and if he was wise with his money. But everywhere he has gone, the programs have gone downhill very, very fast.
Yeah, you know, at a young age, as you're mentioning. And so that seems to be the wave of coaches in the NFL. They're trying to find that young coach that's going to be there for them in the long haul. You can go all the way back to John Gruden with the Oakland Raiders, then becoming the head coach at Tampa Bay, still young in age to win a Super Bowl. You know, that's something that Al Davis has always done. As a matter of fact, you can take that all the way back to the early 70s when he brought on a young John Madden. And so, you know, with that being said, a lot of these teams, a lot of these organizations are looking for the young coach. So when you're successful early, you know, everything looks good. But when it starts to go downhill is the problem. You know, it seems to be something that's taking, you know, you take in a little bit more water, and then your ship sinks. For Lane Kiffin, leaving Oakland, going to Tennessee, SEC country, to where, you know, he was just supposed to turn that conference up on its ears and bring the Vols back to prominence. You know, that didn't happen. It seemed like in the blink of an eye, he was, you know, out of there. And now USC, you know, I believe that he's following on the coattails of his great father, Monty Kiffin, who is a defensive, you know, genius, of course, in Tampa Bay. And so, you know, they're tough shoes. They're big shoes to fill when you have that type of a pedigree or that type of a background that Lane Kiffin has.
Have you had a chance at all yet since you've come back from working the game for the network yesterday to get any insight on who they might turn to and where USC goes next?
Well, you know, the biggest talk, of course, you know, prematurely, there was Herm Edwards' name came out. I think that, you know, that would be a good addition. If you're looking at someone who's stern that can take over a program and demand respect in the locker room, especially at that level, I think that would be a solid pick. But the bigger name that comes out is Jack Del Rio, who's the defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. Of course, he's had some head coaching experience with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, of course, he is a USC alum. And so, you know, that would be the glamour pick right now. And, of course, you know, John Gruden's name always comes up and the usual, you know, names that pop up. But I think that a Jack Del Rio would be a great and interesting pick for the USC Trojans.
And I'm pleased to hear that you didn't say the name Steve Sarkisian, who is finally doing great things and turning the University of Washington program around, as they are also 4-0, as we've been talking, 4-0 in the NFL. Washington 4-0 doing great things again on the football field. And Sarkisian brought this up today with his team, held a team meeting, and his quotes were, "We're a very close-knit group. We're a mature group. We openly talk about things, and I think we're in a good place to do that right now as a football team and a football program." Sarkisian went on to say he would not talk about, quote, hypothetical scenarios. He says, "We're focused on the task at hand, and the task is a big one this week, and that's playing Stanford." And Sarkisian nor his agent have been contacted by USC up to this point.
Yeah, you know, of course we've had callers call in and talk about, you know, the possibility of Steve Sarkisian being lured down to back to USC, you know, because the USC has tons of money. I just think that there was a reason that Sarkisian left USC. I think that he left because, you know, he did all that he could possibly do there. And you know, they had the young gun of coaches. I mean, he was there when Lane Kiffin was there. And I believe if Sarkisian actually eyeballed that position, he probably would have stayed. I just believe that Coach Sarkisian left feeling that he's done everything that he could possibly do there and closed that chapter, you know, in his life, you know, in Los Angeles. And so, you know, the University of Washington, though, Sean Wally, has pretty long pockets as well. And so not a lot of people know that. But in order to lure the Ty Willinghams like they did
Neuheisel.
Rich Neuheisel, you know, as well. I mean, you know, the University of Washington knows how to take care of their coaches. And so, you know, it's good to hear that Steve Sarkisian has squelched all of that noise because – you know, the University of Washington is riding high right now. Like you had mentioned, there's a huge game that's coming up down here in Palo Alto this weekend. And they take on, you know, the Stanford Cardinal, number 5 in the country. The Huskies are number 15. If the Huskies can take care of business there, no telling where they will be in the coaches' polls the week prior, which would set up a huge, probably the biggest game in the country that week. It would be Oregon against Washington, possibly two top 10 teams going at it on Montlake.
And that's another thing, too, is we have no idea how Sarkisian feels about L.A., about USC. He coached there. His ties pretty much end there. He didn't go to school there. He wasn't raised, as far as we know, with a family that was pro-USC. He went to BYU and just so happened he was able to join Pete Carroll's coaching staff at USC. You know, maybe he wasn't fond of the super huge city. Maybe he wasn't fond of everything Hollywood.
Right.
And we already know his pocket and bank account are very large and very deep. And he's the highest paid employee in the state of Washington. So he's definitely not hurting. Not only that, look at the stadiums. You can play at an antiquated LA Coliseum or a $280 million jewel renovated masterpiece that is Husky Stadium.
Yeah. By the way, if any of you haven't had the chance to get to the new Husky Stadium, this is just a remarkable stadium. Of course, it's the fans are closer to the field. They got rid of the track. And it's very similar to CenturyLink Field. Now, you have the suites that are in the end zone to where, that looks very similar to CenturyLink Field. The crowd noise, the noise level is still at an all-time high. Very great place to play. You know, not taking anything away from USC. And again, they're going to get their guy. It's just not going to be Steve Sarkisian.
That's definitely the way it would look. And who knows what could happen in the future, whether or not, you know, if they throw a number at him that just floors him. But as for now, Sarkisian has a job to do, and that is get the Huskies even higher in the polls. And they're marching on up in that direction, unranked when the year began, and as you said, 15th right now.
Yeah, I'm excited, you know. And again, it's a big game, and I'm going to be glued to the TV to watch this one. I believe this is a huge hurdle for the Huskies. If they can go down into Palo Alto and, you know, and take care of business there against a top five team, this is a better team than I thought in the Washington Huskies.
That's the voice of Sean Boyd. I am Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express as we wrap up show 21 and we leave you with the pondering thought of, will there be a government shutdown in less than an hour? And I know that's another topic for another show, but all signs point to, yes, a partial shutdown will be happening, as I just checked the headlines and things are not looking good on Capitol Hill.
Man, I hope these guys can get it together. It just seems like they're, you know, it's not even about the people. It's all about, you know, beating your chest. Yeah, just beating your chest and you know, putting on all these smoke and mirrors. But, you know, I'm praying that things wind up, you know, for the betterment of the country, for the betterment of the people. Let's hope that they do that, Mr. Wally.
Let's get back to basics, indeed. Sean Boyd, it's been a good show. Great job tonight, and we'll talk to you next week for show 22, man.
Hey, yep, look forward to it.
All right, for Sean Boyd, I'm Sean Wally. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.